Welcome to Simulator Review, helping you find quality flight simulation with the world's most comprehensive listings and reviews of simulators. Warm welcome to this episode of our podcast for the flight simulation community. My name's Alexis, and I'm joined by my two colleagues from SimulatorReview.com, Andrew.
Hi there.
And Elliot.
Good day.
Welcome back to our growing number of regular listeners, and to anyone listening for the first time, we are pleased you've found us and hope you stick around. If you're searching for the leading podcast on simulator venues, then you've found it. In this episode, we're going to have a chat about the challenges around setting up, building and running a simulator venue. We'll be joined later in the episode by a special guest who owns and has just started his own simulator venue, so do stay for that. Firstly though, it's our regular simulator news update covering news at simulatorreview.com and in the wider simulator community. And for this week, over to Andrew. Hi Andrew, what sim news have you got for us for this episode?
Thanks, Alexis. I think we're going to look at a couple of green pins to start with. Just a quick recap on the website. If you look at the homepage, we have a map of our 270 now venues from around the world. And effectively, they're coded into three groups. Yellow being they have a page on our site, their name, what type of simulator they have, and address and contact details. Then at the featured venue, the blue pins, we've actually visited, we've met the owners, we've had a go on the sims, we've done a full review of that, for example, Delta 5 in Sao Paulo. And then in between that, we identified a group that we haven't been able to visit, particularly this year, 2020, but would like to provide our readers with more information about what they have. And they have the green pins set up, and there's a growing number of those now on the site. And we have a couple of new additions on that. The first one is Flight Simulator Centre in Newcastle in the UK. A fantastic setup with 9 different simulator experiences for the customer, including the Boeing 73-800, F-18A Top Gun simulated there. They've got a Mississippi 109, a 206 Jet Ranger helicopter, Spitfire. The Spitfire and the Mississippi, I understand, are hooked up for dogfight simulation. So a really great experience, particularly there for the family. So we're writing up the review for them at the moment. So they've got, for example, a VATSIM hookup. They've got a loyalty program and a unique part for their 73 there. They also have a little cabin section as well that people can come along and sort of be part of the experience of whoever they've bought the gift voucher for or that budding pilot in the family.
Yeah, that's an interesting one because I went there several years ago, I think just after they opened, and at the time they had the 737, which had only just been put in, and I think they had one fighter, so I think it was either an F-18 or an F-22 or something like that. But looking at what they offer now, it's massively expanded, and clearly they've been very successful in offering something which is more than just one simulator. It's a number of different simulators of different types of aircraft, helicopter in there as well, fighters, as you say, dogfight simulation as well. There's a lot there that they're doing, and clearly there seems to be the demand for it up there.
And it's, I can see too how they're targeting different parts of the market. So not only the flight, they've now got a full motion racing car simulator as well. So, you know, in the family, someone might be the budding pilot, someone might be the budding Lewis Hamilton. So there's something there for sort of different interests, I guess. So we really look forward to visiting when we're able to at some point in the future. I think it'd be a great place to visit.
Excellent. And any other news this week?
So the second green pin being written up is Nordic Simulator, they're in Gothenburg in Sweden, right on the airport. Part of the Aero Seam simulator, I guess, complex, which is there. All sorts of different aircraft are available. Fantastic setting, how they've put that together. Really look forward to, I think Elliot has dibs on that visit. we've been invited up there to have a review. But in terms of Nordic Simulator, they provide the 737 experience as part of that complex. Nice 220 degree wraparound visuals, nice hookup on P3D as their software. They do have a VATSIM hookup. We've seen that there's a lot more common now venues. I guess people are demanding that as that becomes much more of a staple in people's perhaps flight simming experience at home. We're getting some more information about their setup. It looks really nice. We look forward to getting up there sometime and seeing their venue. Again, this will be written up on our website and be a green pin for the suite of venues.
Yeah, this is definitely one that I've got dibs on visiting. What a fantastic setting. So Ericeum looks like it's a Swedish military aviation museum, although it's got a fair mix of aircraft. One thing that looks quite interesting at Ericeum itself, who do have quite a few simulators, we'll get back to that, but they look like they've got an aircraft bunker, an aircraft hangar built into the side of a rock or a mountainside, which is something they used to do quite a lot up in Scandinavia. And they've got one of those opened up and set up with it looks like a Viggen jet fighter in there. So that's fantastic to see. So I know this was a Nordic simulator specifically, but at the same venue, there's also access to a Viggen, an Airbus A300 helicopter. It doesn't actually say what type it is. So two more Viggens, a Comanche and a Bulldog simulator. So you could actually go to Nordic Simulator and spend quite a while there, certainly more than just the one visit by the looks of it from their website. Great website as well. It's a big English flag, so if Swedish isn't your mother tongue, click on the English flag and it's all translated there for you.
Oh, you can certainly see that. It's a great day out being on the airport itself, different types of simulators available. I think it would be a great experience. So all up, I think there must be about eight, just having a quick look here, eight different simulators available in that sort of area.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at the site and the number of simulators they've got. An A300 is extremely unusual. I can't think of anywhere else I've seen an A300 simulator before, and it's quite a unique aircraft. Is it the first Airbus commercial airliner that was built as well, I think?
It's the Economist's version of the 707, I believe. So the Europeans thought four engines is probably not as economical way to go. So this was the European answer for a big airliner to compete with the 707. Big old range, big old capacity, twin aisle. Yeah, it was the first proper Airbus. I would caution, though, Nordic Simulator is the 737, and it does look as if it's a step up from the other simulators. The ones at Ericeum, which is technically a separate venue, who we're not quite green-pinned with yet, the simulators look a little more basic than the 737. So the Nordic Simulator is very much on a par with some of our other venues that we've been to visit, whereas the other simulators, perhaps not as advanced, but, you know, fantastic selection nonetheless.
Right, thank you very much. Very interesting. And we'll look forward to visiting them in Gothenburg and having a look at those simulators and hopefully getting a review up at some point when we can. So thanks to both Andrew and Elliot for the sim news this week. This week's main topic is about setting up a simulator venue. We wanted to have a discussion about the challenges around setting up, building and running a simulator venue. We always value first-hand experience at simulatorreview.com, and in today's podcast we are very pleased to have a special guest, James, for this. James is the owner of Airline Experience, which is a 737 fixed-base simulator based at Fair Oaks Airport in the southeast of England. He has recently built and opened his simulator venue, so he's well placed to share his experience with us today. Firstly, I want to welcome James to the podcast today, and great to have you here, James.
Hi, Alexis. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem. Glad you can join us. James, I wonder if you could just introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background in aviation.
Yeah, so I've been flying since I was about 14. Did a trial lesson at White Wartham Airfield on the Warrior. Did my first solo at 16, nearly busted Heathrow Airspace, which was quite fun. And then joined CTC after my GCSEs at 17 and qualified in 2012 when sadly there was no jobs. So CTC was where I trained, so did all my frozen ATPL in New Zealand and Bournemouth and Southampton. Unfortunately, when I came out, it was the end of the financial crisis. So there was no flying jobs around, but I managed to walk into Fair Oaks, which is where our sim is today, and walked into Synergy, which is the charter operator there, and just said, can I have a job? I'll do anything just to be near aircraft. The next day, I was on a King Air as a pilot assistant up to Belfast, flying an Organ, which was so really exciting. And so I did that for 6 months, met some amazing people, met my current girlfriend, Anna. And yeah, it was great. Then joined EasyJet on the Airbus, was there for about 4 years based out of Gatwick, and then came across to a big UK airline based out of Heathrow. And I'm now a captain there, so it's been good. But in terms of aviation as well, I've done other things where I've started up a aircraft brokerage, so doing charter stuff out of Farnborough, which is really good fun. Learned a hell of a lot. Met some interesting characters. Did that for about 2 years. Made a bit of money, but it was more about the learning experience. And then, yeah, here we are at Airline Experience, really. So it's been quite an interesting ride. I've seen a lot, met some really interesting people, and yeah, enjoyed it.
Great. So quite a varied history there from when you got your pilot's license to where you are today. What really made you interested in building a simulator and setting up a venue? What kind of gave you the idea, and what really sparked your interest in doing it?
Well, to be honest, I remember being obsessed with it. I remember finding Flight Deck Solutions, which is a large company that makes simulator parts, back when I was probably like 10 or something, and looking through their website, thinking, oh my God, it'd be so cool. And anyway, it just I became obsessed with the – obsessed is a bad word, but I became – in awe of the aviation industry and flight sim. And so I spent most of my life growing up on flight sim, flying around in all types of aircraft on flight sim 2004, FSX, and now P3D. And even to this day, I still love flying around on flight sim, and I'm always on it, always on VAT sim and stuff. And I really thank all that stuff as well as VAT sim for where I am today, because without that, I definitely wouldn't have been at the stand I'm at now, because it taught me so much. So I always was obsessed with flight simulation, and I kind of always had the idea that at some point I'd love to build a simulator. And I always had it in my head that I wanted to build a jumbo simulator, because it was the queen of the skies, it was the classic. So I always thought, right, how can I do that? So when all the events this year started, unfortunately, I was one of the pilots that wasn't flying at all. So I had a lot of time on my hands, sat around annoying Anna, and I kind of thought, well, surely this is the time to start tinkering something, start learning something new. So I found, you might have heard Leo Bodnar, which is a company based up in Silverstone, which sells little unit, USB units that you connect to a computer and can wire switches into and stuff, and creates like a button box, which is the term they use for it. So I bought one of those, bought a couple of switches, and thought, well, I'll just try and see what I can create. I'll see what I can build, see if I can get something working externally and have an effect on flight sim. So after wiring it up and getting the software all working and taking bloody hours dealing with configs and how the files work on FlightSim, finally managed to get the switch to set the part break, which is something so simple, but it worked. And I was absolutely amazed by that. And then it's a bit like flying. I caught the bug. I thought, God, I can go bigger with this. I can go better. I was like, what can I do next? So I thought, well, okay, I'll start. I'll have a look at the switch panel. I thought, well, I'll try and find a switch panel that I could do. I toyed with the idea of building an Airbus, because I thought, I fly the Airbus, I know exactly what it's like. But the limitation with that, first of all, was a software limitation. It was a huge issue with software. There's a great Airbus software out there for P3D, but it's not as you're not able to like go into the files as much. You're not able to like fiddle with the settings. It's not as easy to play with. Whereas the software I was using for the 737, I could do all that. I could delve right into the files and learn about the bits and bobs, how it works and all that. So I bought myself the 737 lower overhead switch lighting panel, which turned up about a couple of weeks afterwards from Spain. And these loads of panels in front of me, all in pieces, with all the switches in pieces. I just thought, God, there's no way I'm going to be doing this. This is going to be a hell of a challenge. So there I was with this, sat down with my soldering iron that I ordered off Amazon, and some solder and bits and bobs, and a glue gun, which I love, and started building. And If you could see my arms, they're covered in burn marks and salt.
I can verify that for you, James. Actually, yeah. I've,
so that, those are my war scars from that, from building that first panel, and I'm quite proud of them because I managed to achieve something I always wanted to do. So there, I had my lighting panel, and it worked, and it was reacting properly. And once I'd done all the coding for it into the sim, I was like, this is unbelievable. But I didn't stop there. I thought, well, right, come on, I can really expand on this. And against Anna's wishes, I decided to continue building, and basically ended up with a single seat. It's quite hard to describe, but a single seat captain side of a 737. And so I built this, got it all working, took about 5-6 weeks for me to build, and it's working fantastically. It's all running off a single computer, which I built, and the software's working. So I'm absolutely amazed with it. So there I was. I had my sim in my study in my 2-bed flat. So the sim was taking up a lot of the flat, which didn't make Anna too happy. And I thought, well, I feel like I really need to do something with it because it's great. I love it. But I feel like it could be used for so much more and it could really benefit a lot of other people. And especially with what's going on in terms of the climate and with people, pilots being made redundant. I thought there's probably a lot of pilots out there that could benefit from just having a play on a sim and just not having to pay a fortune to do it. So that's where sort of airline experience started.
This really started as a home sim project for yourself?
Yeah, exactly. It started out as sort of my home project, something I just really wanted to do. And as Elliot knows, I'm quite bad at sitting still. I'm always trying to do something or learn something or create something. Hence why serial entrepreneurs in that top question. But I do always feel the need to keep myself busy. And so I built the sim, it was working. I was like, right, well, I feel like I need to do something with it. And I just thought using it as not a train device, it's nowhere near that standard, but as a device where some people can learn and we can inspire people and maybe give something back, was a huge thing. And there was me, Anna, two of my best mates who are also part of Airline Experience. We're all like, well, we're all sat around, qualified commercial airline pilots, flying supposedly for some of the biggest airlines in the UK, not flying because we're like, well, we need to do something. We've got these skills. We don't want to go and stack shelves or go and do stuff like that. Let's try and use something that we've got. We've got a tool, which was the sim. So it just basically started from that. Let's take the sim, put it in a unit at Fair Oaks, which is where we all met, funnily enough, and a big part of our life, because it's kind of the holy grail for us, because it's where we all started our careers. We all flew the King out. We all flew the Warriors around. And now we wanted to take something back there that we'd created and do something with people there. And it's fantastic. I walk around that airfield and I know so many people there, and it's a really, really nice community, and everyone's so passionate about flying. So it's sort of, we took the sim, put it there, and just sort of got people flying it and trying to inspire like a new generation of pilots and get people who are current commercial pilots who maybe may have been made redundant or struggling to find a job and let them use it. And it's kind of gone from there, really.
We are curious because we did do a podcast on this earlier about looking at differences between Airbus and Boeing, and we're really curious about why you went down that approach and why you chose that over something you're currently flying.
Yeah, I think, do you know why? I couldn't really tell you. I think a big thing with the Airbus is it's software related. It's all about the software. And the software I was using or could have used to create the sim just wasn't up there. And there's a company called ProSim who sell commercial software for the 737 and 320. And I'm not a huge fan of this, but I won't say too much because I know that they'll probably listen or all this. But they basically charge a fortune for a product which I don't think is up to standard, especially on the Airbus side of it. So I kind of thought, I don't have the money to buy the software, which is extortionate. And I thought the 737 software I've got is just fantastic. It's miles ahead of where anything else would be. And I actually trialed the ProSim software alongside the software that I'm using now on both fronts. And it just amazes me that you've got a software that's quite literally 40 times the amount cost-wise, and it was nowhere near the standard of the other one.
What faults or what issues do you think it had if someone was looking at software choices on that process, and what issues did you think actually that's going to cause me some problems working with it?
It was just a very clunky interface. If that, it's quite hard to describe without having them side by side. It was lacking things like color in the FMC, which I thought think is quite critical in the colors. It just all looked very. It looked like they were selling a product. It is a fantastic product and it does a great job, but they were selling it because they're one of the only people that have it. And like, for instance, we're limited to single seat because the software I'm using at the moment, if we wanted to build the FO side right now, we'd have to go to ProSim.
Okay.
And we just couldn't afford the ProSim software. It's the ProSim software costs more than the sim. So obviously you can see just why it just wouldn't work for us. But in terms of the Airbus Boeing argument, I love the Airbus, flown it for a long time now, and I really love the Boeing from my days of flight sim, and I did my whole MCC and jock course at CTC on a classic 737, actually. So it'll always have a place in my heart. But the big thing about the Boeing is when people think of flying, especially an experience or when you're learning to fly, you think of a yoke. You don't sit there and think of a fly-by-wire side stick. And I'm not putting anything against the Airbus. I'm just saying that someone doesn't get in a flight deck and they'll always go, where's the yoke? Where's the steering wheel thing? And you're like, oh, it's down here. It's by my left knee. It's like, so the sim itself, people get in, they go, oh, this is cool. And the Boeing has, like, as a pilot, I would not be interested in flying the Boeing on a four-sector day. Give it to me in a crosswind or on a two-sector day, I'd be really interested. That's a 737. I'm not talking about the triple, by the way, Andrew, before you crucify me. I'm talking about the 737. I'm not interested in it, really.
Don't worry, I'm not interested in a four-sector day on a triple either.
It's things like the eCAM on the Airbus is just fantastic. The system pages are just so useful. Whereas the Boeing, the 737, it's all a bit agricultural, which is probably good in some ways. But yeah, I don't know. It's
we remember well those days. Sorry, James. Those days, don't we, Andrew, with agricultural learning, the 737. We used to have a systems failure. And we would have to know what is on that system, what's still working, what we've lost, what you need to do now. Whereas these modern aircraft like the Triple and the Airbus, it presents it to you very nicely on a status page. So that level of knowledge, whilst we still need it for the initial type rating, it's readily available in the aircraft now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's exactly it. And I think from a simulator point of view, well, there is a reason the 737 is the most popular simulator, is because it's easier to build than the Airbus. It doesn't have as many limitations, and the parts are more readily accessible. That's the big thing. If you want to build anything other than a 737 or a 320, tough luck. You're not going to do it unless you've got a huge amount of money and can buy the actual aircraft components and make them into simulates parts. But if you want to build a 737 or 320, the parts are all so readily available. But the 320 problem is getting the software to work. It's a software limitation.
That's interesting to hear, and I think it certainly ties in with what we discussed in one of our previous episodes. I think it was podcast 11, where we were talking about really why there were more Boeing and especially 737 simulators than any other type in our directory. So, James, were there any other kind of priorities or considerations you thought of as you kind of moved from a home simulator to a commercial simulator that you were going to set up for the public to visit?
Well, the big thing for us was location. And I always had my heart set on Fair Oaks as being one of the location, because it's, I don't know if you know Fair Oaks, but it's right on the junction between the M3 and the M25. So the catchment area is huge. And when I was doing some research into it, there wasn't many flight simulators down south. There's Flightpad and there's one in Shoreham, but there's not many really that seem to be very good at advertising themselves. So I kind of thought that was a big consideration, the locations Fair Oaks was chosen. And also how the experience comes across. So Elliot's obviously seen where we are, and we're in a very small unit. Like it's tiny, but we've made it use of the space as best we can. So we're not trying to be over the top with it all. We've got the sim, we've got a briefing table, we've got the screen, we've got a whiteboard, we've got some shelves. It's just all very simple and clean. So, but the big thing for us was the professionalism of us. So all our instructors, I'm saying, so they're not instructors, but all four of us, so me, Anna, Graham and Nick, we're all current commercial airline pilots and we love flying and aviation. We're not, it's not just about the sim for us. It's not just about doing experiences. It's about the whole airline pilot world, basically, and flying world. So we're very close with Fairx Flight Center, which is based at Fairx as well. We know the owner very well because we all work for him at some point. So we've got a lot of synergy with them. Funny enough, I call synergy, but we've got a lot of synergy with them where they put customers our way and we put customers their way, and it's gone really well from that perspective. I think the big concern for us, like, to do, we are the selling point. So Nick, who's part of the team, is fantastic on the phone. He could sell snow to Eskimos. So he's been brilliant in that world. And we just basically spent a lot of time walking around Fairx, just chatting, meeting the other companies based there and just trying to spread the word. And so far it's gone all right.
Right. So I think you've actually touched on one of the things I was about to ask you, which is, not only tell us a little bit about airline experience and your simulator, but also what's unique about it. And I think, as you've just said, one of the unique things seems to be that the level of experience and enthusiasm of your four instructors that you've got there.
Yeah, absolutely. We're selling an airline pilot experience. We're not selling a sim experience. We're not selling a flight experience. We're selling the whole thing. So we were trying to step away from selling time in the sim. That was the big thing we were trying to step away from. We want them to come in and feel embraced in this world of aviation. So what we brief about, what we're talking about, what we're thinking about, what the different threats to the operation, how we come up with a fuel figure, how we deal with defects, how we deal with failures. And then we take them in the sim and put it all together and show them how to fly it. And the way the sim's set up, because obviously it's a single seat 737 at the moment, so everything is there, but it's quite literally just missing the FO screens and the EFS control. So where the FO point would be is where the instructor sits. So you've got the instructor station and the instructor is sat where the FO would be, so we can still operate multi-crew completely fine. So we can talk them through. We've even got a little side stick where we can help them out if they're making a dog's ear of it. So it's fantastic from that point of view. Yes. What I was going to say is that what we do is to depending on what the client wants to achieve, we can tailor it and tailor the instructor to it. So for instance, we've got someone coming in next who is a qualified pilot who's not got a job yet, who just wants to come in and prepare for a sim assessment. He's got his heart set on Ryanair, and he had an application for Ryanair, so that's why. And so we've paired him up with Graham, who is Ryanair, who has run the assessment. So we kind of tailor it towards the people that would benefit them the most. And Anna's written a complete training package for him because he's coming in for a good few hours to do stuff. So it's very much a tailored experience. So we're not so much selling just time in the sim. It's the whole thing, like ground days and stuff. So we've had people in before lockdown who were doing their ATPLs who just wanted to have a look at how a weather radar worked and how it painted on the screen and all that. So it's been good from that point of view.
So, James, in terms of setting up the simulator itself and the venue, were there any specific challenges or issues you came up with that were unexpected and that somebody who was looking to set up a sim might come across as well?
So I built the sim. So the sim for me was quite an easy way to, I knew exactly how to run it, I knew exactly how to fix it when it goes wrong, and I knew exactly where to go to fix the problem. So my biggest piece of advice for someone doing it is, if you're going to build a sim and you've got other people work for you running the sim, make sure they know how to use it and make sure they know how to deal with it when it goes wrong. Because at the moment, I'm the only one who knows how to fix the sim if it goes wrong. And in the first days of running it, when we had some customers in, the overhead would drop out, or the overhead would suddenly switch off all the power. There was just a few little bugs which I had to iron out. And I remember one night, started the driving home, 10 minutes later to get a call from Graham saying the overhead's not out. Drove back. And I drove back to Fairx probably three times in the space of an hour just to try and fix this overhead. And finally we did get it fixed. But my biggest piece of advice is make sure you understand the software and make sure you show people how to do it for the lowest common denominator. So that's probably that. And also do it. Like, go buy yourself a little switch panel. Go buy a little Leo Bodnar card or something, or an what's the other one I use? Arduino card. and you'll get addicted to it, because there's nothing better than seeing your creation actually work. So that's my big piece of advice.
So James, what's coming up in the world of airline experience in the future?
So obviously we're doing the Twitch stream at the moment. We are basically going to try and just get some bookings. And so I don't know if anyone's had a look at our website, but we're doing 25% off, and we're also doing gift boxes. So this is something that we're trying, that Nick's come up with, which is a different idea, where on our gift experiences, we're giving a little box. They're really cool. They're little post box, little boxes that are about, I don't know, 20 centimeters by 30 centimeters little boxes. And in there, we've got a little guide on the 737, a little checklist, a key ring, some pens, some stickers, and just made a little gift box, which is very personalized to the person we're sending out to. So we're doing those at the moment for Christmas. But if you buy one of our experiences with a gift box, you get two experiences for one. So we're basically doing half price off for Christmas sales, which is quite exciting. So that's probably the big thing we're doing at the moment. And also, I think the idea is that we'd really want to build an Airbus sim, funnily enough. So I think that will probably be our next project as and when we can with the money. We'll try and build an Airbus. But yeah, so it's quite exciting.
I might buy one of those gift boxes myself, get my little girls in the sim.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, it's two for one, as I say, which is quite a good deal, I think.
I really like the idea of the Twitch stream as well, James. So do you want to tell us just a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so we started Twitch streaming just to try and keep ourselves busy and using the sim. So, and it's a bit of fun as well, trying to show what we do. It's good marketing. So we're currently running the Twitch stream Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. At the moment, we're doing it from 4 o'clock to about 6, 7. But we are thinking of delaying it a bit to make it more of an evening time thing. But you can follow us on Instagram. So we're on Instagram, Airline Experience, and Twitter, Airline Experience. And also our website is www.airlineexperience.co.uk, and you can find all the information about the sales on there. But yeah, so, and if you're ever passing Fair Oaks or anything at all, please just pop in. We're more than happy to show you the sim and show you how it works and just chat to anyone who's interested in aviation, really. So it's taken us hours to film this record this podcast because we love talking about it. So, but please pop in and have a chat.
And in addition then to all of James' activities as well, simulator reviews, we'll be visiting Airline Experience and we'll carry out one of our blue pin reviews. So anybody listening out there who wants to see how it compares with other venues, what they offer, we'll be there with some video, some photos, and you'll have an opinion from people who know what 737s and airliners fly like. So keep an eye out for that.
Great. Well, I think it's really been a fascinating and a fantastic discussion today, and we've certainly had plenty to talk about. So thank you very much for coming on, James, and sharing your experience. We've found it very interesting, and I think our listeners have too. So thanks, James.
No worries at all. Thank you for having me.
You can book a session at Airline Experience via their website, airlineexperience.co.uk, and their Twitch channel that James mentioned. They stream quite often, so that's Going Visual on Twitch. So if you do go, do remember to mention us as well. We'll also be visiting soon, as Elliot mentioned, with our crack team of reviewers and bringing you a Blue Pin featured review very soon. A very interesting chat with James about his experience starting a simulator venue from scratch. If you've done the same, we'd love to hear from you and hear all about your experiences and challenges you faced, and whether what James has talked about matches your own experience. So do get in touch with us. In our next episode, it's time again to have a look at another of the Blue Pin featured review simulator venues in our database. And to remind you, these are the ones we have visited in person and done a thorough review on. This time we'll be looking at Dream Aero in Dubai and their full motion 737 simulator. We'll be having a chat about the venue and our review and letting you know what we thought. So I hope you'll join us again for that in 2 weeks' time. In the meantime, subscribe to our podcast using any of the main podcast services. We're available on Apple, Google, Spotify, and quite a few others. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a star rating and review. Also, this is the last episode before Christmas, so from all of us at simulatorreview.com, we hope you all stay safe, and we wish all our listeners a Merry Christmas, and we hope that some of you get some simulator gifts. For now, though, it's goodbye and Merry Christmas from me, and goodbye from Andrew.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from Elliot.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to the Simulator Review podcast. We would love your feedback, so please do comment and rate us. Please follow, share, like, and subscribe on all our social media channels where you can see regular updates on new simulator listings and reviews, as well as our latest articles. Until next time, happy simming.